You're listening to The Break Breakdown. I'm Benjamin Shaw, your host. All season long, we've been talking about process, specifically the creative process and producerial process of making Kinsley Verses, our web series, which is now streaming on YouTube. At some point, though, while we conducted interviews with all the artists who worked on the show, Courtney and I realized that if we really wanted to explore process, we actually had to take a look outside our own, because the making of art is very personal and also often very subjective. So we've started to widen the conversation to include other indie filmmakers. Today, I'm going to talk with the creator of a documentary series called Taste. It tells the story of food entrepreneurs from around the world, 70 short films across 21 countries in three continents. I'm so happy to welcome to The Break Breakdown, creator Kevin Longa. Can you talk to me about your art-making process? How do you work as an artist?
This is going way, way back on my quote-unquote process, but back in high school, when I was like making my first food documentary, they also tangentially gave us like this career quiz. Like we took this kind of like software course that asked us a bunch of questions about our personality and interests and things like that. And basically it spits out, like what your career vocation, your ideal vocation should be. And at the top of the list was documentary filmmaker. And the reason why, one of the big reasons why, was because I'm pretty inquisitive. And I will do that all the time. Whether it's, I see somebody at Washington Square Park, I will literally go up to a stranger, and I'll talk to them and I'll ask them questions. Or, you know, wherever I go around, you know, the city, the nation, the world, I'm always asking questions. So that's like, I think that forms the bedrock of my artistic pursuits, is being inquisitive and that curiosity.
So you just got to New York 400 days ago, roughly. Mm-hmm. You grew up in the Bay Area. Tell me about your education, your training, et cetera.
So my film education started way, way, way before any notion of like, say, a film school or anything like that was even like a possibility. I have always been in love with making movies, or not just making movies, watching movies.
What's your earliest memory of him watching a movie?
Earliest memory. I can certainly tell you my first visceral emotional feeling that made me want to become a filmmaker. I loved James Bond. But that was not the movie that made me want to become a filmmaker. I loved those movies and I still do. My family and I, we would have this tradition as my birthday came around, which is around Thanksgiving. And so that's when a lot of movies start coming out, is, you know, during the holiday season, or big movies, I should say. And one of James Bond movies was coming out, Tomorrow Never Dies. And so I pleaded to my parents, let's go watch this PG-13 movie. I was definitely not 13, but, you know, they were cool. And not only that, but they also said, you know, we should do a double feature. We should actually, in addition to watching James Bond, let's see this movie about a boat. And I kind of rolled my eyes and I was like, oh, come on, that sounds so boring. And so we go into the theater, I get my James Bond fix, and the next movie is Titanic. And it just blows my mind. The artistry, the storytelling, the music. I mean, there's another aspect. Like, I became a flute player right after watching Titanic, because I wanted to play the flute solo that happens at the beginning of My Heart Will Go On.
What's so great is that, how honest that is, because as kids, we're, you know, the things that speak to us are sometimes the things that we might roll our eyes at as adults. And I like that you shared that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sometimes I do get a little embarrassed about it. But, you know, like, you've worked on Harry Potter. It's massively successful. But there's something universal about his story, about the story of, like, the childhood crushes at Hogwarts and the trials and tribulations and the awkwardness of being the preteen and everything. And I think that Titanic, it touches upon that as well. There's a reason why it was so popular around the world.
So you said that filmmaking came long before film school. You became interested in it. Did you study film?
I've never technically gotten a degree in film school. I went to UCLA. I got my degree in economics and my minor in human complex systems. And I did do a lot of film school studies. And part of the reason why I'm here in Greenwich Village is because I was able to use a scholarship to attend NYU, and I attended some of their film school classes. But I never really fully went to film school. And there's a lot of reasons behind that. I think the biggest one is, you know, I do not come from a family of filmmakers. I was told, you know, Kevin, you might not end up liking film in the long run. Like, and it's true. Like, it's kind of insane that we make people, or these young adults, like 18, 19 years old, decide what they want to do for the rest of their life. I really wanted to become a producer. In fact, there's, you know, another movie that was very formative for me was Mel Brooks's The Producers. and I, although I would never be a producer like Max Bialystock. But
let's make sure that's clear right now.
Yeah. No, I just love the song and dances and the making fun of Nazis. Just the idea of becoming a producer was very beguiling to me. It was so fascinating. All in all, not having film school has actually been one of the greatest blessings, because I've been able to kind of think differently and to think a little entrepreneurially about my approach to indie filmmaking. And so that's been my education.
Speaking of entrepreneurs, let's talk about food entrepreneurs, which in the case of this series, if I remember accurately, you are talking about food entrepreneurs in a sort of broad sense of the word entrepreneur. You have chefs, you have fishermen, there are bakers, there are restaurateurs, there are pastry chefs, candy makers, there's grocers, there's hunters, there's farmers. So talk to me about where the idea of this, of culling this group of people together as food entrepreneurs, where did the idea come from?
So the idea of pursuing not just chefs, but entrepreneurs, started off right from the get-go. And it's because of my own love with entrepreneurship.
I mean, what's so breathtaking is that there's a grandeur and a scale to this project that often as artists, we are told to like harness our ideas. How did you harness this?
A lot of grit and work and time. I've been working on this for the last 10 years. So that's just to give some perspective. It's not like this has happened overnight and like I'm not famous or anything. Like this is still a work in progress. You know, I'm enchanted by telling epic yet intimate stories. Mm-hmm. And I believe that nothing unites people more than food and storytelling. That's why I do this series. There's nothing that I feel really brings people there more than what we do as storytellers and what people who I've filmed do, which is creating food. And food touches everything. Like it is the environment, it is politics, it's war, it's peace, it's family, it's feast, it's social justice. Is all, it is the wind. It is like my skeleton key to being that inquisitive person who loves to ask questions, because wherever I go, people need to eat food. And wherever there is food, there is stories. Wherever there are stories, there are these big, epic topics that really affect our world.
So 10 years in the making, with a food as the common denominator, how did you go, like, What are the cliff notes on how you did this? A lot of time and grit, yes, but like practically, I imagine if there wasn't a strategy at the beginning, a strategy was birthed over the course of time. What did you learn, or what would you say are the steps that you took that are key to understanding how you did this?
You're absolutely correct, Benji. I mean, when I first started out, I had no idea what the hell I was doing. Of course, like I had been making films ever since I was 8 years old. But, you know, those films were like shot on my dad's Hi-8 Handycam. And they're not really like films. Although, you know, that goes into my narrative of like taking a first step. Like I taught myself editing back in like middle school. And so this was kind of a natural progression of those skills and talents. And really it, like practically I had my little DSLR camera. Like I got it off of Craigslist for like less than $600. Wow. And what I've learned as a filmmaker over these years is it's not the paintbrush. It's the painter, you know. Now I'm not saying that I'm like, you know, Michelangelo or, you know, Picasso or anything like that, but so many people can get lost in like the cameras and the lenses and everything like that. But at the end of the day, we're here to serve an audience. An audience comes for a story. They're not there for specs and everything like that. And so I came in with my small little DSLR camera. It was a Canon T3i Rebel, and I just started reaching out to places and people who I had. So part of the benefits, one of the benefits of not being in film school at UCLA was I didn't have to be on campus for all 4 years. I could study abroad. And so for a year, I actually lived in Europe. I lived in Copenhagen, Denmark. And during that time, I backpacked across Europe and I met amazing people. And some of these people were people who created food. In fact, I saved up, I ate like cheese and crackers for months in order to save up to go to what was at the time and still arguably is one of the best restaurants in the world, Noma, and that's in Copenhagen as well. And it was pioneering the food movement. So even though I did start this project 10 years ago, really I was kind of preparing for it for many, many years. In fact, I'm just going to, here's a very Cliff's Notes version of my origin story. But basically, like I mentioned, I've been making films ever since I was 8, but I was also pretty obese when I was a kid. And I learned I was about to get type 2 diabetes at 11 years old. And so I started learning about my food through the best way I knew how, which was through my video camera. And I started going to like local farmers markets and farms and restaurants, interviewing people who make food. And by the time I was in high school, I made my first feature-length food documentary. So technically, taste, yes, even though I've been making it for 10 years, I've been making it for many more years than that.
What point did it become a strategy, or did it like a contained shape where you decided 70s short films, et cetera? Like when did that, at what point in the 10 years do you think you started to really have a shape?
Good question. Well, yes, I felt like Dustin Hoffman in The Graduate after I graduated college. It was the tail end of the economic recession. Nobody was hiring. And I guess a lot of my life, and I think a lot of filmmakers' lives, is born out of rejection. And just like how I didn't get into USC and their producing program and I cried. Well, I was, like I mentioned earlier, I studied economics at UCLA, and that basically meant that you were supposed to go into business, right? Mm-hmm. And so I started interviewing at a bunch of companies, got rejected left and right. And one company, a big company, I guess it doesn't matter if I say they're too big, they don't give a shit about me, Google. I had interviewed with them for like 4 months. And by the end of it, I got to like the last round. And then eventually they said, I'm sorry, we're looking for more experience. And, you know, it's that whole catch 22. How do you get experience if you don't have it, right? But I just broke down crying. And all of a sudden, out of the blue, I get a phone call from my friend Brian, who started the Film and Photography Society back at UCLA with me. But he gave me a call and said, hey, we just got invited to this big film festival in Asia. Do you want to come? And I was like, I don't know, man. I got to find a job. And he was like, "What is your job? What do you actually want to do?" And so I thought about it. And about a week later, got back on the phone. It's like, all right, I'll go with you, but on one condition. I want to take your camera. He had a Canon 5D, which was pretty nice at the time. And I said, I want to film what I love, which is, you know, people who make food. And well, actually, we won't get too much in the weeds in this because I know we're kind of pressed for time. But I actually initially wanted to do the show was called Shaken, Not Stirred, How to Live Like James Bond on a Budget. Well, that quickly like fell by the wayside. Yeah. And that I'm glad it did, because as I was in Asia, I started, you know, of course, when you're in Southeast Asia, food is out on the streets. There's plenty of street food. It's incredibly affordable. And you see fresh ingredients and fresh food being created right in front of you. And so what I would normally do is I would, you know, see the people making my food. I would record that. And then as I was eating the food, I would actually talk with the people. And I met such amazing people. Like I met this one chef who basically lived through the genocide of Cambodia, the Khmer Rouge. And he subsisted off of this tarantula recipe that he created. And now he has a restaurant where he is helping struggling young adults, and he gives them an opportunity in his restaurant. And one of the first recipes that he teaches them is that tarantula recipe. And wow. They're creating a new Khmer cuisine after, you know, years of genocide and everything. So I just learned these amazing stories. And so once I got back home and I looked through a lot of the footage, I didn't have enough to like make documentaries, but I had enough of a sense that I needed to go back. And like, in that instance, like I went back to Cambodia in 2016 to film with them in earnest. So it's all kind of an iterative process.
Iterative and also formative. I mean, you grew up with this project, or you became an adult with this project, I would say. Is that accurate?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. This is going to be my lifelong project for sure.
Yeah. So looking back, if it's going to continue, how cool to have a project that is always ongoing, if not strategically, accidentally. Looking back at the 10-year mark, what have you learned?
Resilience. I have learned resilience, not only for myself, because as you well know, filmmaking is a very tough endeavor, but more so of people. And you're talking to a person who used to be a shy, fat introvert, who was afraid to be like, my happy place was food and filmmaking. I mean, it still is. Like, I still retreat to the movie theaters here in New York City. I don't go out that often, like to bars or clubs or things like that. I'm still a bit of a nerd, and I think I always will be. The people who I ended up filming with, they at every stage of my journey has taught me something. So whether it be, you know, the organic farmers in the Bay Area when I was a child, who was like, we kind of take organic and regenerative farming. Well, not regenerative farming yet, but organic kind of for granted. You see it in all the grocery shelves and stuff like that. But back when I was growing up, when we were growing up, it wasn't really as popular of a thing. And, you know, when I was filming with these people who were pioneering the organic food movement, I saw that, you know, they didn't get straight A's. Like, they were kind of misfits. They were the people who I was seeing in, like, you know, my movies that I loved, like Revenge of the Nerds, or like people who were building literal fields of dreams, you know? And it helped me break out of my, like, they helped me break out of my shell. There was a time when I was like afraid to talk to girls and stuff like that. And I saw, you know, these restaurateurs or these chefs with happy relationships with their spouses and things like that. And it helped me grow, you know, a little bit more confidence. And then on top of that, like, I just graduated 10 years ago. I was out of a job. And then I find people like a snail farmer in Vienna who ditches his job as an IT consultant at IBM, a very similar route that I would have gone, and does something what they consider as crazy, what they call in German, Verrückt. That's the name of the film, Verrückt, the snail farmer of Vienna. And he creates a snail farm. And so all these people that I've had the privilege of filming have kind of given me that confidence that, oh, what I'm doing is, you know, not that crazy, and maybe I should just keep going. And it taught me that resilience that I think was so crucial of what I've learned for the last 10 years.
From a filmmaking perspective, what was an unexpected, tell me one unexpected moment.
Something that is a little unexpected is, and it goes hand in hand with the topic of resilience, is there are a lot of things that are going to come and go, but passion is something that is enduring. And what I mean by that is I have seen a lot of changes over the last 10. Everyone has seen a lot of changes over the last 10 years. I started this back before Netflix was even a streaming service. Like, it's just like when it was just serving up DVDs for people.
Like, he didn't know the way that this is now being distributed, pardon me, is actually quite conducive to what you're making. But it wasn't when he started.
Oh, absolutely. It was a big question mark. I even made like 30-minute TV pilots and stuff like that. There, I've been in development hell. It's been all that contributes to resilience. But
I see. Yes, of course. I want to point something out, just sort of brought, like, give this a topic sentence. Distribution models will change from now to whenever, right? And so you don't want to become boxed in by something like, how do we distribute this? Because to your point, like, the culture, the technology will shift and you will shift with it. But from what I hear in your answer is, like, there's been many versions of how this was going to be distributed, right? And is that accurate? Like, you have continued to bend with the times.
A really great truism that I've learned over the years is, like, companies and business models will come and go, but art endures. Like, we still watch a Hitchcock movie, or, you know, we still look at Michelangelo's David, and because it touches something human, and to be human is enduring. But yeah, like, there was a point when I was part of this startup, I was one of the first creators for this platform that was started by one of the co-founders of YouTube. And it was made for food creators. And that came and went, like, in a flash. And so, you know, if we're to kind of, like, extrapolate some kind of advice from the adversity that I've experienced, it's that. It's exactly what you said, Benjamin. It's just, be true to the story that you want to tell. Of course, you do need to be aware of the commercial landscape, but don't let it dictate who you are and what you want to make.
Final questions. Do you have a favorite documentary?
Well, I'll tell you my most formative documentary. It might be a pretty obvious answer. Back when I was 11, it was actually kind of a happy accident that my English teacher in eighth grade, Mr. Green, assigned us to go see Super Size Me as an extra credit assignment. And this was during the time when I was struggling with my weight. And it just blew my mind because I thought, like, I live and breathe narrative fiction films. And I wasn't really into documentaries at the time. And after watching that film, I realized that not only can documentaries be a great film, but they can also help change the world and help people, audiences, understand and change themselves. And that's what I did afterwards. Like, literally, I literally gave up McDonald's for the rest of my life. I literally started, you know, doing exercises and, like, push-ups and stuff in my bedroom and making sure to be accountable about what food I was eating.
How can we find your series? Tell us where to find it.
Well, right now, I am, part of the reason why I moved to New York was to finish up editing a number of the films. And so there are a few sneak preview episodes out on Amazon Prime and on YouTube. And then I post daily on Instagram and TikTok and Facebook, some behind the scenes videos and content and things like that. And then on my website, tastewithkevin.com, you can sign up for the free online premiere.
Kevin Longo, what a pleasure to have you on The Break Breakdown.
Well, thank you, Benjamin. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to today's bonus episode of The Break Breakdown. If you haven't already, sign up for the Queensbird List, a weekly digest curated for curious, creative, ambitious minds making indie art. You can find the link to sign up in our show notes. And you can follow us and find us on social at Queensbird Films and at The Break Breakdown. Today's episode was produced and hosted by Benjamin Shaw. Our guest today was Kevin Longa. You can find out more about Kevin and his work at tastewithkevin.com. Season 3 of The Break Breakdown is made possible through the generous support of Eddie and Wendy Shaw. Special thanks to Craig, L, and Ren Hansen. You can watch Kinsley Versus now on YouTube, and The Break Breakdown is a project of Queensbird Films.